All right, let's jump straight in. You sent us this really detailed report on Beauregard ASA, and honestly, the story. It's fascinating how they turn something as common as wood into these incredibly valuable, highly specialized bioproducts. It's genuinely quite something. Our mission today is to dig into what makes this company tick and what powerful lessons, you know, we can all learn about competitive advantage, sustainable innovation, and how a business can build remarkable resilience over decades. So if you ever wondered how a company pivots away from being a mere commodity producer to becoming a true leader in niche, high-tech bioproducts, or what it actually takes to build a truly defensible business in today's increasingly complex world, then this deep dive is absolutely for you. Let's unpack it. So Beauregard ASA isn't just any company. The report paints it as a prime example of a multi-decade transformation. But what exactly was it, and what has it truly become today?
It's truly a compelling case study, yeah. It showcases a profound strategic pivot that, frankly, few companies execute so successfully. For over 30 years, Beauregard has systematically transformed itself. They went from what was essentially a traditional, highly cyclical commodity pulp and paper producer.
Right, the kind of business that goes up and down with the market.
Exactly. Highly volatile. And they turned into a highly specialized, technology-driven biochemicals company. The core idea here, which they've executed relentlessly, is a specialization strategy. Think of it as moving from being a general store, you know, selling undifferentiated goods, to becoming a master craftsman, focusing on highly specific, high-value niche products.
A craftsman with wood, essentially.
In a way, yes. A very high-tech craftsman. And this wasn't a sudden revolutionary moment. Not at all. It was a quantifiable, deliberate process, carefully managed over decades. Imagine the sheer tenacity required. How does a company make such a fundamental, successful pivot over three decades? And showing remarkable resilience, too, even through economic headwinds like global recessions and major industry shifts. Think about the decline in paper consumption.
Yeah, that's a huge headwind they navigated.
Precisely. That's what makes their story so instructive. They move from a business susceptible to volatile global commodity prices, where profit margins could swing wildly,
right,
to one that creates highly engineered, bespoke solutions for specific high-demand industries. It's a complete reimagining of their entire value proposition. They literally turned what others saw as waste into their most valuable assets.
Okay, the report mentions this term, biorefinery. It sounds incredibly advanced, maybe even a bit like a buzzword sometimes. Is it genuinely at the core of their value, or is it just a sophisticated term for, well, a pulp mill?
No, it's absolutely foundational. It's the very core of their value creation engine. It's not just marketing speak. Beauregard operates one of the world's most advanced and, importantly, sustainable biorefineries. The underlying concept is centered on maximal raw material utilization. So instead of just focusing on the wood fibers for paper.
Like a traditional mill would.
Exactly. They take natural, renewable wood feedstock, specifically Norway spruce, very carefully sourced, and they convert nearly every single component of that tree into a wide array of advanced biochemicals, biomaterials, and bioethanol. And many of these products are specifically designed as direct, sustainable substitutes for oil-based products. That aligns perfectly with global sustainability trends, the drive for a circular economy.
So they're hitting that environmental angle hard, too.
They are, but it's deeply integrated with the economics. Consider this impressive fact. The company reports that a staggering 94% of its feedstock is converted into commercial products and energy.
94%. That's incredible efficiency.
It really is. And that's not just a feel-good green statistic. It's the relentless pursuit of economic value from every single input. This level of raw material utilization fundamentally reshapes their cost structure and competitive advantage. It makes them incredibly difficult for any non-integrated competitor to match. Most traditional pulp mills, for instance, would treat many of these wood components as waste or very low-value byproducts. They'd be dramatically underutilizing their raw material, leaving significant value on the table.
Right, just burning it or getting rid of it somehow?
Precisely. Beauregard's biorefinery, by contrast, turns that traditional waste into literal gold. It creates what you could call a circular economy within their own operations. It's a masterclass in efficiency and resourcefulness.
That 94% utilization rate is truly astounding.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, though. How do they actually capture so much value from essentially one tree? It sounds like they've completely cracked the code on wood chemistry. Can you walk us through the actual journey of a single tree once it enters their biorefinery? Like, what's the very first step and what's the key chemical trick they're performing there?
They absolutely have cracked it, yeah. And it's a brilliant chemical engineering feat. The integrated nature of their biorefinery creates this powerful, self-reinforcing, synergistic flywheel. That's really the magic behind their ability to extract such multifaceted value from a single tree.
A synergistic flywheel.
Okay. So the process begins in their biomaterial segment. This is where they produce high-purity specialty cellulose from the wood fibers. Now, this isn't just about grinding wood. It's a sophisticated process that carefully separates the cellulose from other wood components. Crucially, a co-product of this initial process is lignin.
Lignin. Remind me what that is again. Think of it as the natural glue that holds wood fibers together. It gives wood its rigidity, its strength. Now, in a traditional pulp mill, this lignin might be viewed as a low-value byproduct, maybe just burn it efficiently for energy or even discard it. It's often seen as something to simply get rid of.
Right, the stuff you don't want for making paper.
Exactly. But here's the genius of Borregaard. This internally generated lignin becomes the critical, cost-advantaged feedstock for their high-margin biosolutions segment. This segment then takes that lignin and transforms it into a whole array of high-value lignin-based biopolymers and, incredibly, the world's only wood-based vanillin.
Wait, vanillin? Like the vanilla flavor from wood lignin?
Precisely. The very same flavor compound. They're not just making paper components. They're making an essential flavor ingredient that typically comes from petrochemicals or vanilla beans, all from a tree. And this internal linkage provides a profound structural advantage that is almost impossible for anyone else to replicate.
Okay, that internal supply chain sounds key.
It is. Let's imagine a hypothetical competitor wanting to enter the lucrative lignin-based biopolymers market. That company would face a massive multifaceted hurdle. They'd either have to invest hundreds of millions of dollars to build their own specialized pulp mill just to secure a consistent high-quality lignin source.
Which is a huge barrier to entry.
A huge capital outlay. Requires decades of expertise that Borregaard already has. Or they have to try and buy lignin on the open market. And if they do that, they expose themselves to volatile pricing, inconsistent quality, uncertain supply. It's a nightmare from a manufacturing perspective.
So they'd always be at a disadvantage.
Always. Borregaard, by contrast, benefits from a secure, consistent, and high-quality internal supply of lignin. And its cost basis is intrinsically linked to its own integrated operations, giving them unparalleled control and predictability. This directly contributes to BioSolutions' superior and far more stable margins. It truly demonstrates a deep, synergistic connection across their entire business model that forms a powerful, durable, competitive moat. It's really a masterclass in vertical integration and chemical valorization, turning every part into something valuable.
Okay, let's dig into the segments. This BioSolutions segment really stands out in the report as the crown jewel.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly are they producing here that makes it so profitable? And, you know, where does it actually end up? Who buys this stuff?
This segment is indeed the primary engine of profitability and growth for Borregaard, consistently delivering impressive returns. It's where they develop, produce, and sell those high-value products derived specifically from that lignin we just discussed, the natural binder in wood. Their product portfolio is quite diverse, actually. It includes a wide range of lignin-based biopolymers and that unique wood-based biovanillin.
Okay, biopolymers. What do those actually do?
Good question. These aren't just any chemicals. They are high-performance dispersing and binding agents. They solve specific, complex problems for customers, which is key to their value. For instance, in agrochemicals, they act as adjuvants.
Adjuvants, like helpers.
Exactly. Think of them as performance enhancers for pesticides and fertilizers. They help them work more effectively, spread better, get absorbed more efficiently by plants, makes the farm's inputs go further. They're also vital in advanced batteries, contributing to better performance and lifespan, and in industrial binders, and even in construction, as concrete admixtures.
Concrete? How does wood lignin help concrete?
It makes it stronger, more workable, allows it to set more efficiently. It's a performance additive. And then there's the biovanillin. This isn't just a niche product. It's a premium, sustainably sourced ingredient. It's supplied to major flavor, fragrance, food, and beverage industries globally. Think big consumer brands. What's truly unique about Borregaard's position is their leadership. They are the market and technology leader in lignin-based biopolymers, having developed this unparalleled expertise over decades. And as we mentioned, they are the only global producer of PEFC-certified wood-based vanillin.
That certification matters, I assume. the sustainable sourcing?
Hugely. PEFC certification means its sourcing is entirely sustainable and traceable. That's a massive differentiator for many global brands who have their own sustainability targets.
Right. They want that green credential in their supply chain.
Exactly. And the financial results undeniably back this up. BioSolutions delivered an all-time high result in Q1 2025, and this strong momentum continued into Q2, largely driven by robust sales into the agriculture sector. For the full year 2024, this segment alone generated NOK 1,104 million in EBITDA on NOK 4,241 million in revenue. That resulted in a remarkably robust 26.0% EBITDA margin.
26% margin, that's very healthy.
Extremely healthy for this kind of industrial operation. This level of profitability vividly underlines the success of their specialization strategy and why it's considered the crown jewel. It shows that by focusing on highly technical, high-performance applications, they can command premium pricing and maintain excellent margins, even when raw material costs fluctuate.
Okay, so BioSolutions is the star performer. Now, the biomaterials segment, that's where they start with the wood fibers, right? It sounds like the foundational piece. How does this fit into their overall strategy, especially given its exposure to, well, volatile wood prices?
Exactly. This is indeed the operational starting point of their integrated biorefinery. It focuses on the very fiber component of the wood. The biomaterials segment produces high-purity specialty cellulose. Now, this isn't your everyday paper pulp. It's a highly refined raw material. It's used for sophisticated derivatives like cellulose ethers.
Cellulose ethers? Like what?
Think thickeners in food, pharmaceuticals, even things like wallpaper paste, and cellulose acetate, which is used in everything from textile fibers to cigarette filters and photographic film. Lots of different applications.
So quite diverse end markets there, too.
Very diverse. And these derivatives then find their way into a broad spectrum of very specific high-value end markets. For instance, their high-purity cellulose for pharmaceutical applications isn't just about chemistry. It's about meeting incredibly stringent regulatory standards and ensuring consistent purity that few others can match. That makes them a trusted, almost indispensable partner to drug manufacturers.
So they embed themselves in the customer's process.
Precisely. Their strategy here is to continuously push up the value chain. They focus on more technically demanding, highly regulated, high-purity applications, precisely because these are the areas where they can command premium pricing and differentiate their product. It's a constant effort to move away from commodity-grade pulp towards highly specialized, performance-driven materials.
But you mentioned the wood cost issue.
Yes, exactly. This segment has a distinct characteristic that sets it apart from BioSolutions. It's much more exposed to raw material cost volatility, especially wood prices. We saw a clear example of this in 2024. Despite an impressive 11% increase in sales volume and higher revenues overall, the segment's EBITDA actually decreased to NOK 434 million.
So volume's up, profits down.
In that specific year, yes. Primarily because higher wood costs compressed its margin quite significantly. It went from a healthy 24.0% in the previous year down to 16.6%.
Wow, that's a big hit to the margin.
It is. And it highlights the margin sensitivity of this foundational segment to input cost fluctuations. While it provides the crucial lignin feedstock for BioSolutions, its own profitability can be more directly impacted by external raw material markets. But there's innovation here too. This segment also includes their emerging technology, cellulose fibrils, marketed as Exilva.
What's special about that?
This is novel microfibrillated cellulose, essentially incredibly tiny, strong cellulose fibers. Think nanoscale. It has unique properties like high viscosity, great stability, good film forming capabilities. It's currently in the commercialization phase. This hints at future innovation and a continued drive to add even more value within this foundational segment, potentially reducing its exposure to commodity risks over time if it takes off.
Okay, so they've extracted the fibers for biomaterials, they've taken the lignin for BioSolutions. What about the other bits, the remaining components of the wood, like the sugars? Are those just discarded, or do they find a purpose within Borregaard's integrated model too? Or are they getting value there as well?
Not at all. That would be completely contrary to their philosophy of maximal raw material utilization. That 94% figure tells you they're using almost everything. The fine chemicals segment cleverly utilizes the sugar components extracted from the wood during the pulping process, along with their other advanced chemical synthesis capabilities.
Yeah.
It's really a testament to their truly integrated approach that practically nothing goes to waste.
Okay, so what do they make from the sugars?
The segment produces two main product lines. First, second generation advanced bioethanol, and second, fine chemical intermediates. The bioethanol they produce has a significantly lower carbon footprint than synthetic alternatives. We're talking about up to 90% reduction in CO2 emissions compared to fossil-based ethanol.
90% lower footprint. That's substantial.
Very substantial. It makes it a highly attractive, sustainable option for industries striving for greener solutions. It's sold into various markets, including biofuels, industrial solvents, and disinfectants. The fine chemical intermediates are another example of their deep specialization. These are highly specialized products, primarily supplied for the production of non-ionic X-ray contrast media.
Contrast media for medical scans.
Exactly. The stuff they inject to make your insides show up clearly on an X-ray or CT scan. It's absolutely critical in medical imaging for clearer diagnostic scans. This shows their penetration into highly regulated and demanding markets where precision and purity are paramount. You can't afford impurities in something you inject into people.
No kidding.
And Borregaard is a leading producer of these specific intermediates. They're also a significant European producer of advanced bioethanol.
So how profitable is this leftovers segment?
Well, its performance can be somewhat opportunistic, influenced by prevailing bioethanol prices.
Yeah.
For instance, results in the first half of 2025 were a bit weaker due to lower bioethanol sales prices. So it does show some partial exposure to more commodity-like dynamics, even with its high-value niches. But despite that, it still delivered exceptionally high and stable margins overall, reaching an impressive 42.1% in 2024.
42%. Wow.
Exactly. So even the leftovers are turned into incredibly profitable specialized products. It really completes the picture of their full raw material valorization model. It's about squeezing every last drop of value out of that Norway spruce.
This whole specialization journey truly sounds like the heart of their story. It comes up again and again in the report. But sometimes, you know, these corporate narratives can feel a bit like a slogan. Is there a concrete, quantifiable way to actually measure its success beyond just saying they specialize? How do we know it's actually working financially?
That's an excellent question, and you're right to ask it. It's far more than a slogan for Borregaard. It's a tangible, measurable, and long-term strategy. And it's demonstrably working. It really began over 3 decades ago as a very deliberate move away from the intense cyclicality and often razor-thin margins of the traditional pulp and paper industry. The core of this journey has been to leverage their unique competence in wood chemistry, particularly their specialized sulfite pulping process for softwood.
Sulfite pulping? Is that different from what most mills do?
Yes, it's less common than the Kraft process, but it's particularly well-suited for producing the high-purity cellulose and the type of lignin they need for their specialty applications. It's key to separating the specific wood components with the high purity required. This unique process allows them to continuously upgrade and transform their products over time.
Okay, so how do they measure the success of this upgrading?
The success can absolutely be quantified, and this is where it gets really compelling. While their operating revenues grew at a solid 9.3% compound annual growth rate, CAGR, between 2020 and 2023.
Which is good growth.
It is good growth. But the real measure of success lies in the quality of that revenue and the efficiency with which they generate it. Management uses a key performance indicator that perfectly encapsulates this. Value creation per employee.
Value creation per employee. Okay, what does that show?
And here's the kicker. This metric has more than tripled over the past 15 years.
Tripled? That's a huge increase in productivity and value.
It's massive. This isn't just a number. It's tangible proof that they're squeezing exponentially more value out of every person and every dollar of capital they deploy. Now, you might think that increased specialization brings greater complexity and higher indirect costs, and it does.
Right. Things like more R&D, regulatory stuff, technical sales.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Areas like regulatory compliance, intellectual property protection, needing more specialized technical sales support, those costs do go up. However, the fact that value creation per employee has risen so dramatically shows that the margin and value uplift from these specialized products has far outpaced any associated increase in cost or complexity. This provides a very clear, quantifiable framework for evaluating all their future strategic initiatives and capital investments. Everything they consider has to contribute to this ongoing journey of enhancing value creation per employee.
So it's a core strategic driver backed by hard numbers.
Precisely. It's a compelling example of how a strategic narrative can be validated, demonstrating a relentless focus on efficiency and high-value output.
Okay, so Borregaard isn't just specialized. It seems they're perfectly positioned within some massive global shifts, these big tailwinds. That sounds almost too good to be true sometimes. What are these big trends exactly, and how genuinely all in are they on riding these waves? Is there a risk of them being caught between old and new industries?
That's a great question, and it's a critical point for understanding their long-term potential. Borgard is operating at the absolute sweet spot, right at the confluence of two major, highly favorable industry trends that provide powerful tailwinds for their business. And no, there's no risk of them being caught between. They've fully committed to the new direction. They made that choice decades ago.
Okay, so what are these two big trends?
First, there's the broader ongoing shift towards specialty chemicals. This whole industry focuses on customized, performance-enhancing products that solve specific problems for customers. Unlike commodity chemicals, which are undifferentiated and totally price-driven, specialty chemicals command higher margins and are typically much less cyclical.
Because they're essential ingredients for the customer's product.
Exactly. They're often critical components that enable specific functions or improvements for the end user. Borgard's biopolymers and specialty cellulose fit perfectly into this category. Simultaneously, the market for bio-based chemicals and materials is experiencing powerful, secular growth. This isn't just a fleeting trend, it's a massive shift. It's projected to reach a staggering $500 billion market size by 2030.
$500 billion, that's enormous!
It is, and this growth is being driven by multiple reinforcing factors. You have strong regulatory tailwinds, like the EU's Sustainable Products Initiative, which encourages more environmentally friendly production and mandates certain changes. Then there's the widespread commitment from corporations to meet their net zero pledges. They're actively seeking sustainable alternatives throughout their supply chains.
So their customers are demanding these kinds of products.
Increasingly so.
Yeah.
And finally, there's growing consumer demand for products with a lower environmental footprint. People want greener options.
Okay, so specialty chemicals and bio-based solutions. How does Borgard fit into both?
Well, that's the beauty of their position. Borgard is uniquely positioned because its products are both bio-based in their origin and highly specialized in their function. This dual identity allows them to capture both the green premium.
Because they're sustainable, renewable.
Exactly. Lower carbon footprint often. And they capture the performance premium.
Because their products actually work really well, maybe even better than the old alternative.
Precisely. They offer superior functionality. They've strategically cultivated these global niches where they can defend a leading market position. And they use a highly diversified portfolio, over 800 products, across various end markets as a natural hedge against downturns in any single sector or geography.
800 products. That's a real diversification.
It is. It means they're inherently resilient to single market shocks. Because if one sector, say construction, slows down, another, like agriculture or pharma, might accelerate.
And that diversification makes a lot of sense. But who exactly do they compete with in these highly specialized niches? It can't be easy. And have there been any recent market shifts that directly impact them?
The competitive environment is, as you might expect given their specialization, quite fragmented. It varies significantly by segment. In biomaterials, they largely compete with other pulp producers who have also specialized in high-purity cellulose, companies like Sappi, Lenzing, and Rayonier Advanced Materials, or RYAM. For their biosolutions segment, the lignin valorization piece, competitors include companies like Ingevity. They're another significant player in lignin-based specialty chemicals, though Borgard's unique process often gives them an edge in certain areas. And for fine chemicals, they face a diverse set of rivals, ranging from pharmaceutical intermediate producers to other bioethanol manufacturers. It really depends on the specific product line.
Okay, so a few key players in each area. Any big changes lately?
Yes, what's truly fascinating here and a very significant recent development is a notable tailwind specifically for their biomaterials segment. We've seen announced closures of competitor plants, specifically the GP facility in Foley, Florida, and the RYAM facility in Témiscamingue, Quebec.
So competitors are shutting down capacity.
Exactly. This represents a meaningful reduction of softwood specialty cellulose capacity in the market. The estimate is around 250,000 to 300,000 metric tons, which is a big chunk for these specialized grades. This kind of market rationalization is a huge deal because it immediately creates a tighter supply-demand balance for these niche products. Less supply, same or growing demand.
And that benefits Borgard how?
In two critical ways. First, it presents a clear opportunity for them to capture displaced customer volume. Customers who used to buy from those closed plants need a new supplier. The company itself estimates they could absorb an additional 15,000 to 20,000 metric tons of demand, primarily in those high-purity grades where they excel.
Okay, so more sales volume, potentially.
Yes. And second, and perhaps even more importantly for profitability, This tighter market provides significant support for higher pricing across their entire specialty cellulose portfolio. Basic supply and demand. This external catalyst directly reinforces their internal strategy of improving their product mix and margins within biomaterials. It could potentially accelerate profitability and help to offset those persistent high wood costs that we noted earlier.
So it's a bit of good fortune aligning with their strategy.
Precisely. It's an example of how external market dynamics can amplify a company's internal strategic efforts and provide a sudden boost.
So beyond favorable market trends and these competitor shifts, what are the fundamental durable competitive advantages, the moats, as the report calls them, that make Borgard so incredibly difficult to challenge? Why can't someone just copy them?
They've built several durable moats, which is absolutely crucial for long-term value creation and defending their market position. And these aren't just minor advantages. They are deeply entrenched barriers to entry. It's not easy to replicate what they do.
Okay, lay them out for us. What's moat number one?
First, and perhaps most significant, is their proprietary technology and process knowledge. This isn't something you can just buy off the shelf or reverse engineer overnight. It's deep institutional knowledge of wood chemistry, accumulated over 30-plus years of relentless specialization and continuous R&D. This expertise, combined with their unique processes within their highly integrated biorefinery, creates products that are incredibly difficult for anyone else to replicate. The clearest manifestation of this technological advantage is the fact that they are the sole global producer of wood-based anilin. That alone tells you something.
Being the only one. Yeah, that's a strong position. What's next?
Second, they benefit from high customer switching costs. In many of their key markets, especially those highly regulated ones like pharmaceuticals and food, customers face substantial hurdles if they were to try and switch suppliers. When a pharmaceutical company, for example, formulates a drug around a specific grade of Borgard specialty cellulose or biopolymers,
they design their whole product around it.
Exactly. Changing that supplier isn't a simple procurement decision like buying office supplies. It's a complex, costly, and time-consuming process. It involves extensive retesting, reformulation, and potentially new regulatory qualifications that can take years and millions of dollars.
So customers are locked in. To some extent.
It creates an incredibly sticky customer base, yes. And it provides Borgard with significant pricing power and demand stability, as customers would rather pay a premium than risk product integrity or those huge regulatory hurdles.
Makes sense. What's the third moat?
Third is their integrated supply chain, which we discussed at length with the biorefinery concept. That internal sourcing of lignin from their biomaterial segment provides a significant structural cost and quality advantage for the high-margin biosolutions segment. This deep integration is a formidable barrier to entry for any potential competitor. Imagine trying to compete with them in lignin-based biopolymers without controlling your own lignin supply. You'd always be at a cost disadvantage, subject to external market whims for your raw material, and struggle to match Borgard's consistent product quality.
Right, that internal flywheel again. And the last one.
And finally, they've achieved operational scale in niches. While they are, relatively speaking, a smaller player in the vast global chemical industry overall.
They're not Dow or BASF.
No, exactly. But they have deliberately chosen to become big fish in small ponds.
Right.
They hold leading global market positions in their chosen niches, like lignin-based biopolymers or specialty cellulose grades. This niche leadership provides crucial benefits of scale in R&D, in production optimization, in global market access that are specific to those areas. It allows them to serve global customers effectively and efficiently within those defined markets.
So dominant within their chosen battlegrounds.
Precisely. These four moats combine technology, switching costs, integration, and niche scale create a highly defensible business model, allowing them to capture that green and performance premium consistently.
Okay, this all sounds like a really compelling strategy, a fantastic story. But in the end, as always, it has to translate into actual financial performance. Have they been growing consistently and staying profitable through all this complexity and investment? What do the numbers say?
An analysis of their financials from 2020 to 2024 reveals a pretty clear growth trajectory coupled with remarkably resilient profitability. So yes, the strategy is showing up in the numbers. Their operating revenues have expanded from NOK 5.3 billion in 2020 to over NOK 7.6 billion in 2024.
So decent top line growth, what's the rate on that?
That's a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of about 9.4% over that period, which is
very solid top-line growth for an industrial company like this.
Okay, 9.4% AGR.
And profitability.
More impressively, their EBITDA, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, basically a measure of operating profitability, has grown from NOK 1.3 billion to a record high of NOK 1,874 million in 2024. And the most compelling part for me is that the EBITDA margin has remained remarkably stable and strong, consistently hovering around the 25% mark. 25% margin, consistently. Even with cost pressures.
Yes. And that resilience is particularly noteworthy given the significant inflationary pressures they faced on raw materials like wood and energy during this period, 2020 to 2024. It serves as strong evidence of their pricing power and their successful ability to continuously improve their product mix towards those higher margin specialties, insulating them somewhat from those cost shocks.
So the strategy is protecting the bottom line.
It appears to be. Looking at the segment level, BioSolutions is clearly the primary driver. Its EBITDA jumped over 20% in 2024 alone, hitting NOK 1,104 million, and its margin expanded to that strong 26.0%. Biomaterials, however, as we discussed earlier, shows the direct impact of those higher wood cost pressures. Its EBITDA fell sharply in 2024 despite higher volumes, and the fine chemical segment, while smaller in revenue contribution, has delivered exceptionally high and stable margins, consistently around 42%.
So BioSolutions is pulling the train, essentially.
It clearly illustrates that the company's ability to drive growth in that high-margin BioSolutions segment is absolutely key to offsetting challenges or volatility elsewhere in their portfolio. It really underscores the success of their specialization focus.
So they're growing profits, their margins are strong, but how healthy is their balance sheet? And what about their cash flow? That's often where the rubber meets the road for long-term value, right? Is the cash actually coming through?
That's a crucial area, absolutely. Borregaard maintains a strong and very prudently managed balance sheet, which is definitely a hallmark of a well-run company. At the end of 2024, their net interest-bearing debt stood at NOK 2,240 million. This translates to a leverage ratio, defined as net debt to EBITDA, of 1.20x.
1.2x net debt to EBITDA, is that high or low?
That's comfortably at the low end of their stated target range, which is 1.0x to 2.25x. They deliberately keep it in that range to maintain their investment-grade credit quality. Their equity ratio also remained very healthy at 53.1%, so they own more than they owe. This conservative leverage provides them with significant financial flexibility to fund future growth initiatives and weather any potential economic downturns without undue stress. They're not over-leveraged.
Okay, balance sheet looks solid. What about the cash flow question?
Right. Now, there's a nuance here when we look at their cash flow. Cash flow from operating activities actually declined in 2024 and went down to NOK 1,068 million from NOK 1,563 million in 2023.
A decline in operating cash flow. That sounds potentially concerning.
It can be. The company attributes this decline explicitly to an increase in net working capital.
Working capital, meaning inventory and receivables.
Yes, exactly. Inventory, receivables, minus payables. Now, while a working capital buildup can sometimes signal issues, like slowing sales leading to rising inventory or difficulties collecting payments, in Borregaard's specific context, with growing revenues and sales volumes, it's more likely due to a couple of less concerning, perhaps even positive factors.
Such as?
Such as the higher valuation of their inventories simply because raw material inflation, like those increased wood costs, made the stuff they hold more expensive on paper. And potentially a strategic decision to carry more inventory deliberately to ensure supply chain security in a volatile global environment. They might be choosing to hold more buffer stock.
So maybe not a red flag, but something to watch.
Exactly. For you, the listener, a key question for analysis is whether this represents a temporary fluctuation that will normalize as inflation eases or supply chains stabilize, or if it's a new, structurally higher level of working capital required for their operations going forward. A permanent increase would impact long-term free cash flow generation.
But how do we judge their overall efficiency with capital then?
Well, it's important to balance this with the return on capital employed, or ROCE. This metric has been consistently excellent, coming in at 17.1% in 2024. This is comfortably above their long-term target of 15% over a business cycle.
So they're generating good returns on the money invested in the business.
Yes. This sustained high ROCE is a crucial indicator of management's effectiveness in deploying capital to generate strong, profitable returns from their unique asset base, even with the short-term working capital fluctuations. It suggests they invest wisely.
So looking ahead, what's next for Borregaard? How are they planning to sustain this impressive growth and strategically allocate their capital for the future? What's the game plan?
Their growth strategy is really a direct and logical extension of that specialization journey we've been talking about. It seems deeply ingrained in their corporate DNA. Management's top priority, as they articulated at their recent Capital Markets Day, is organic growth driven by market-focused innovation. This isn't just about expanding volume. It's about systematically improving the value and the profitability of their output, making each ton of wood generate even more profit.
How are they doing that specifically?
Key initiatives include continuously enhancing their product mix. That means leveraging that high-value lignin to develop new biosolutions applications that solve specific customer problems, and pushing the biomaterial segment even further into those highly regulated, technically demanding grades that command premium prices. They're also pursuing targeted geographic expansion. They see significant potential for deeper market penetration, particularly in Asia, and they're expanding their R&D capabilities in India to support that.
Investing in R&D for future growth.
Absolutely. Innovation is a core engine. A significant share of their revenue consistently comes from products launched in just the last 5 years. Their R&D pipeline is focused on solving customer problems and capitalizing on sustainability trends, developing new bio-based alternatives to petrochemicals for things like home care products, and even novel materials for rapidly growing sectors like electric vehicle batteries.
EV batteries. Interesting yeah. application for wood components.
It is. And they're remarkably disciplined with their capital spending. In October 2024, they announced a significant NOK $490 million investment. This is to debottleneck and expand capacity at their core Sarpsborg biorefinery.
Debottlenecking, so making the existing pipes bigger, essentially.
Metaphorically, yes. Optimizing existing bottlenecks in their production process, making their current lines more efficient and productive without building entirely new facilities from scratch. This project is expected to increase overall capacity by 5-10% by 2027. And it's a classic example of disciplined capital deployment, leveraging existing infrastructure and proven technology for high-return projects. They're targeting an internal rate of return, IRR, of over 15% on this investment.
Solid return target. Any other big bets?
Well, in parallel, they're taking a more, let's say, venture-style approach to long-term innovation. They've steadily increased their investment in Alginor.
Alginor. What do they do?
They're a Norwegian marine biotech company focused on a blue biorefinery using kelp or seaweed as a feedstock instead of wood. Borgard's commitment is now NOK $419 million for a 35% stake.
So a significant minority stake in seaweed refining.
Yes. And this is a sophisticated risk-managed option for them. It gives Borgard exposure to and valuable knowledge of non-wood-based feedstocks and new technologies without massive upfront capital commitments or putting their core wood-based business at risk. If Alginor succeeds and scales up, Borgard is perfectly positioned as a key partner or even an acquirer, already having deep understanding. If it doesn't pan out, their core business is insulated from significant financial impact.
Hedging their bets on future feedstocks.
Smart. It really shows a dual approach to capital deployment, optimizing the core while exploring high potential adjacent areas. It's a hallmark of sophisticated, long-term strategic thinking.
That dual approach sounds very prudent. So putting it all together now, what does all this mean for someone interested in shareholder returns? How does this translate for investors?
The capital allocation policy is very well defined. It aims to balance the critical need to reinvest for future growth with the commitment to returning capital to shareholders. It's not just about growth at all costs.
Mm.
In 2024, their total capital expenditures were NOK 861 million, and this was strategically split between replacement investments.
Keeping the existing plant running well.
Exactly. Ensuring the long-term integrity and maintenance of their existing asset base. And expansion investments, which are geared towards those strategic growth initiatives we just discussed, the debottlenecking, the innovation.
Okay, so investing back in the business. What about payouts?
Their dividend policy is clearly stated as regular and progressive. They aim for a target payout ratio of 30-50% of net profit over time. And their history strongly confirms this commitment. We've seen their ordinary dividends consistently increase from NOK 2.3 Zgap per share for the 2020 fiscal year up to a proposed NOK 4.25 per share for the 2024 fiscal year. That's a nice upward trend.
A progressive dividend, as promised.
Yes. They've also shown flexibility with special dividends when excess cash is available, like the one they paid out in 2022. Share buybacks haven't been a primary method of returning capital historically, but they did execute a small opportunistic repurchase program in late 2024. They also have authorization from their annual general meeting to repurchase up to 10% of their outstanding shares, providing another tool for capital management, though it seems they use it sparingly and opportunistically rather than systematically.
So dividends are the main route for returns right now?
Primarily, yes. Overall, you can see a consistent and prudent approach to capital allocation that prioritizes sustainable growth while also rewarding shareholders along the way.
All right, but no company, no matter how well-managed or well-positioned, is without its challenges. We touched on wood costs. What are some of the other recent headwinds Borregaard has faced, and how have they responded to them?
You're absolutely right. Even the best-run companies encounter headwinds, and Borregaard is no exception. They've certainly faced their share. For them, the most significant challenge recently, as you mentioned, has been substantial inflation in raw material and energy costs. Wood costs, their primary feedstock, saw that big increase 24% in 2024 compared to 2023. This was largely driven by a tight pulpwood market in the Nordic region, and it directly compressed margins, particularly within that biomaterials segment. Energy costs have also been volatile, impacting production expenses across the board.
So how did they fight back against rising costs?
Management has been actively working to mitigate these pressures. They've invested in energy efficiency across their operations, for example, optimizing energy consumption in their pulping and recovery processes to use less. And critically, they secured a new 10-year hydropower purchase agreement.
Locking in hydropower prices?
Yes, for a significant portion of their needs. This provides them with long-term price stability and predictability for electricity, shielding them from some of that market volatility. Hydropower is also clean energy, which fits their profile. Their primary strategic response to these cost pressures, however, remains the relentless execution of their specialization strategy.
Moving up the value chain protects margins.
Exactly. By continuously moving to higher value applications, the absolute cost of raw materials becomes a smaller percentage of the final sales price. This strategic shift allows them to better protect their margins from input cost volatility compared to a more commodity-focused business. They also face risks, of course, from potential economic slowdowns. While their highly diversified portfolio across numerous end markets and geographies provides a natural hedge.
We mentioned the 800 products.
Right. But some key markets, like construction and automotive, are inherently cyclical. A significant downturn in these sectors would inevitably impact demand and potentially overwhelm some of their diversification benefits. So while they're prepared, it's not without challenges. They're not immune to a major recession.
Okay, so for someone looking at this from a critical perspective, maybe playing devil's advocate, What are the key risks you should be aware of that could potentially impact Borregaard's future performance? What could go wrong?
That's essential. There's always a range of potential risks that any investor or curious mind should consider. First, there are operational risks. The high degree of integration at their main Sarpsborg biorefinery, while a huge source of competitive advantage, is also a concentration risk.
Everything happens in one place, basically.
A lot of the core processing does, yes. It's a single, highly complex site. Any unplanned shutdowns, significant operational disruptions, or major incidents there, say, a fire, a critical equipment failure, a chemical spill, could materially impact the entire group's production and financial results for an extended period. That's a key vulnerability.
Okay. Operational concentration. What else?
Then we have financial risks. Despite their strong balance sheet now, a sharp and sustained rise in global interest rates would increase their debt service costs, hitting profits. The recent increase in working capital, which we discussed, if that were to become a permanent structural feature rather than temporary, it could constrain free cash flow generation over the long term. That would impact their ability to return capital or fund new projects as easily. They also have currency fluctuation exposure due to their global sales footprint. Think about revenue coming in euros and dollars, while costs are often in Norwegian krone. While recent net currency effects have actually been positive for them, this could always reverse and become a headwind.
Currency swings are always a risk for global companies.
Always. Next are strategic and competitive risks. The primary strategic risk here is probably a failure to maintain their innovation momentum. They rely on staying ahead. The bio-based chemicals market is becoming increasingly attractive, which will naturally draw in more competition over time. You can bet others are looking at their success. There's a risk that larger, very well-capitalized competitors could decide to enter their niches, perhaps through aggressive M&A, buying up smaller innovators, or that new, disruptive technologies could emerge that challenge their current process advantages, or even render their core production methods less competitive.
Like someone finds a cheaper way to make wood-based vanillin.
Exactly. Or maybe makes it from algae or something else entirely, leapfrogging their wood chemistry expertise. That's a constant threat in tech-driven industries.
Okay. And the last category of risk.
And finally, despite all their specialization, they still face commodity and cyclical risks. The business retains a degree of exposure to commodity price cycles, particularly for its key feedstock, pulpwood, and energy prices, even with hedging. Furthermore, even with their diversified end markets, a severe economic downturn in key sectors like construction or automotive would still likely lead to significant demand contraction, potentially challenging their overall resilience and sales volumes. These are the factors that you, the listener, should closely monitor for any material impact on Borregaard.
On the flip side then, what could significantly boost or hurt their performance in the near to medium term? What are the key catalysts, positive or negative, that could really move the needle for Borregaard?
Right, catalysts are key. From a positive perspective, there are several that could really accelerate their performance. First, successful commercialization of new technologies. This is a big one. A real breakthrough in products like cellulose fibrils, that Exovate product we mentioned, moving from early commercialization to widespread adoption. Or the successful launch and scaling of their new green technology platform they're developing for home care and industrial coatings. They could open substantial new high-margin revenue streams that aren't fully priced into the company today. It demonstrates the embedded optionality in their R&D investments.
So a hit product from the R&D pipeline.
Exactly. Second, sustained pricing power in biomaterials. If that market tightness in specialty cellulose, driven by those recent competitor plant closures, proves durable and continues for an extended period, that could lead to a faster and more significant recovery in the biomaterials segment's margins. That would provide a meaningful boost to the group's overall profitability, especially since that segment's margins were recently compressed by wood costs.
A margin recovery story.
All right. Potentially, yes. Third, favorable regulatory changes. Any acceleration of regulations in Europe or North America that further favors bio-based and sustainable materials over petrochemicals would act as a powerful structural tailwind for Borregaard's entire product portfolio. This would essentially expand their addressable market and demand as industries actively seek compliant, greener alternatives faster than expected.
Okay, those are the upsides. What about potential negative catalysts?
On the negative side, conversely, there are a few key factors that could hurt performance significantly. A sharp spike in input costs. A sharp, sustained, unexpected increase in the price of wood or energy that the company is unable to fully pass on to its customers would lead to severe margin compression and a significant decline in profitability, challenging their hard-won resilience.
Costs spiraling out of control.
Yes. Also, a sharp global recession. While the business has proven resilient in past downturns, a really deep and prolonged global recession would likely lead to a significant contraction in demand across most of Borregaard's key end markets. It could potentially overwhelm the benefits of its diversification and really impact top-line growth.
A really bad downturn hits everyone eventually.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. And finally, technological disruption. The emergence of a new, more cost-effective technology for producing lignin-based products, or vanillin perhaps from a non-wood source, or through a fundamentally different chemical pathway, could fundamentally threaten the technological moat of their core biosolutions segment, which is their most profitable.
The ground shifting under their core business.
That's always a risk for technology leaders. These are the factors, positive and negative, that you, the listener, should closely monitor for any significant shifts affecting Borregaard.
Okay, so after delving into the strategy, the financials, the risks, the catalysts, how does the market actually value a company like Borregaard? Does it truly recognize all these unique advantages and the transformation you've described? Is it expensive, cheap, fairly valued?
That's where it gets interesting looking at the valuation. An analysis indicates that the market currently assigns Borregaard a premium compared to more traditional chemical or pulp and paper companies. This premium reflects the market's appreciation for their specialized business model, their strong and resilient margins, and their consistent growth profile. The market does seem to recognize the quality here.
Okay, so it's not treated like a basic materials company. What are the numbers?
As of mid-2025, looking at their trailing 12-month valuation multiples, their price-to-earnings PE ratio was around 22.5x. Their price-to-sales PS ratio was about 2.5x. And their price-to-book PB ratio is approximately 3.5x.
So PE over 20, not exactly a bargain bin stock.
No. What this tells you is that Borregaard is generally not considered a cheap stock on standard metrics. Instead, it's valued by the market as a high-quality industrial growth company. It reflects its strong fundamentals and that defensible position we discussed. Investors seem willing to pay a premium for that stability and consistent performance, understanding that it's a specialty chemical player, not a commodity one.
But given their unique integrated model, with these three distinct segments, biosolutions, biomaterials, fine chemicals, how do you even compare them to other companies? Identifying a perfect peer must be incredibly difficult, right?
You've hit on a critical point. Identifying a perfect peer group for Borregaard is, frankly, inherently difficult. Almost impossible to find a direct match because of its unique, integrated business model that spans several different subsectors of the chemical and materials industries. A truly meaningful comparison requires looking at companies that compete with their individual segments, rather than just lumping them into a broad category like chemicals or paper.
So break it down segment by segment for comparisons.
Exactly. If you compare them to more traditional pulp and fiber-focused peers like Sappi or Lenzing, Borregaard's valuation is at a significant premium. And that premium seems entirely justified by their superior profitability and highly specialized product mix. Those other companies are generally more exposed to commodity cycles and don't have the same level of value add. When you compare them to pure-play U.S. specialty chemical companies like Ingevity, Quaker Chemical, and Ashland, Borregaard's EV/EBITDA multiple is broadly in line, which seems reasonable. However, its PE multiple is at the higher end of that peer range, suggesting market confidence in its earnings quality and future growth potential.
So peer suggests it's maybe fully valued or slightly expensive on some metrics.
It highlights the inadequacy of using a simple peer average to fully capture Borregaard's value. A more sophisticated approach is needed, like sum of the parts or SOTP analysis.
Sum of the parts, meaning value each segment separately.
Precisely. This recognizes that Borregaard is a combination of distinct businesses, each with different growth and profitability profiles. The high-margin, high-growth biosolutions segment, for instance, should logically command a valuation in line with high-end specialty chemical companies, or maybe even specialized food ingredient producers given the vanillin. Meanwhile, biomaterials might be benchmarked against other specialty pulp producers, and fine chemicals against other producers of fine chemical intermediates or bioethanol. The consolidated valuation you see in the market is really a blend of these different underlying values.
And that implies something important.
It implies that any significant acceleration in the high-value biosolutions segment's growth and profitability could justify a re-rating of the entire company's valuation upwards. As biosolution becomes an even larger driver of the group's total value, it could pull the whole company's multiple up with it.
Okay, that makes sense for earnings and segment valuation. But what about their ability to generate free cash flow? That's often considered absolutely crucial for long-term value creation and sustainability. Is that as robust as their earnings look?
That's a key question, especially given the working capital discussion earlier. Their free cash flow for 2024 was approximately $207
million. $207 million. That sounds quite a bit lower than their EBITDA of over $1.8
billion. It is significantly lower, yes. Yeah. And this figure is a direct consequence of those two main factors we discussed. The buildup in working capital and a period of elevated capital expenditures, both for maintenance and expansion. Based on this single year's FCF, the free cash flow yield that's FCF divided by market capitalization would appear relatively low, probably just over 1%.
Which wouldn't look very attractive on its own.
On its own, no. However, it's crucial to view this in a broader context. A single year's FCF can be quite misleading, especially during periods of heavy investment and growth, like Borregaard is undergoing now. The current high level of CapEx isn't just spending, it's a strategic investment in future growth, enhanced efficiency, and improved environmental performance. These investments are specifically expected to lead to higher and more sustainable free cash flow in subsequent years, once these projects, like the debottlenecking, come online and start generating returns.
So you need to look beyond the current year's FCF dip.
Absolutely. For your analysis, a proper FCF-based valuation would need to normalize for these working capital swings, maybe average working capital over a cycle, and carefully model the expected returns from their current investment cycle, looking forward several years. Their long-term ability to consistently convert their strong EBITDA into distributable cash for shareholders remains a key determinant of the company's intrinsic value. It's about looking at the trend and the strategic intent behind the numbers, not just a single, potentially distorted snapshot.
Understood. Now, all this impressive performance, this multi-decade strategy, this foresight, it must come from strong leadership. What can you tell us about Borregaard's management team and its board? Are they the right people to navigate these complex markets and continue this journey?
You're absolutely right. Strong, stable leadership is paramount for executing such a long-term transformation, and Borregaard seems to shine here based on the report. They benefit from a stable and experienced management team with deep expertise in the specialty chemicals and materials industry. A key recent development underscoring this is the appointment of Tom Erik Foss Jacobsen as the new president and CEO, effective August 2025.
Okay, a new CEO. Is that a big change?
Well, it's significant, but importantly, this is not an external hire bringing in a completely new vision. It's a seamless internal succession. Mr. Foss Jacobsen was previously the executive vice president running the highly successful BioSolutions segment.
The crown jewel segment leader is now CEO.
Exactly. He ran the company's primary engine of growth and profitability. This internal promotion sends a clear and powerful signal to investors about the company's strategic direction. By elevating the leader of its most successful and specialized division to the top role, the board is definitively signaling a doubling down on the specialization and value creation strategy that has defined the company's success over the past decades.
So strategic continuity is the message.
Very much so. It significantly reduces strategic uncertainty for the market and provides a strong sense of continuity, ensuring the strategy remains consistent. The board of directors itself is also composed of individuals with relevant and diverse experience. They're drawn from other major Norwegian and international industrial and financial companies, providing robust oversight and strategic guidance that complements the executive team's operational focus.
So experienced oversight, too.
Yes. It seems like a strong governance structure with a good balance of internal expertise and external perspective.
So it sounds like stability and internal promotion are key parts of their leadership approach. But are management's interests actually aligned with the long-term success of the company? You know, do they have skin in the game? And are they transparent with external stakeholders like you, the listener, who are trying to understand them?
Absolutely. That alignment and transparency are crucial for building trust, and Borregaard appears to demonstrate a strong commitment to both based on this analysis. They provide clear public information on the shareholdings of their management team and board members, and all insider transactions buying or selling of shares by executives or directors are promptly disclosed to the market. This ensures that you, as an interested party, can see where management's personal financial interests lie. They definitely have skin in the game.
So you can track if they're buying or selling.
Yes. And their compensation structure for senior management also includes explicit mechanisms designed to foster long-term value creation, not just hitting quarterly numbers. For example, the incoming CEO, Mr. Foss Jacobsen, is expected to use his own personal funds to acquire company shares until his holdings equal twice his annual base salary.
Twice his salary in shares? That's a significant personal investment.
It is. It's a substantial personal commitment, ensuring his wealth is directly tied to the company's stock performance over the long run. Furthermore, their share option program has a specific clause. It requires that at least 50% of the after-tax proceeds from any exercise options must be used to purchase shares in the open market. And those shares are then subject to a 3-year lockup period.
So they can't just cash out options and run. They have to reinvest and hold.
Exactly. These policies are deliberately designed to create direct, tangible financial incentives for management to focus on the long-term appreciation of the share price, aligning their personal wealth creation with the company's sustained success.
Okay, alignment looks good. What about transparency?
In terms of transparency, Borregaard maintains an active and open dialogue with the investment community. They hold regular quarterly result presentations, investor meetings, and comprehensive capital markets days, where they really detail their strategy, their progress, and their performance against targets. Their financial objectives, like the ROCE target, the leverage target, the dividend policy, are clearly articulated, publicly available, and consistently tracked in their reports. This allows you to hold management accountable for their stated goals over time.
So they tell you what they're going to do, and you can check if they did it.
Precisely. This combination of alignment through incentives and transparency through communication seems to be a hallmark of high-quality governance at Borregaard.
Well, this deep dive into Borregaard has truly showcased how a company can achieve, really remarkable resilience and profitability through strategic specialization. It's such a compelling story of turning a seemingly basic raw material like wood into this diverse portfolio of high-value, sustainable products. It really does feel like they've found a hidden treasure within every tree.
It's absolutely fascinating, isn't it, how a company can completely reinvent itself just by deeply understanding its core raw material, in this case, wood, and relentlessly pushing it up the value chain, finding value in every single fraction. It's a powerful testament to the power of specialization, long-term vision, and that crucial integrated operation in creating durable competitive advantage, even from seemingly humble beginnings in commodity pulp.
They really did turn lead into gold, metaphorically speaking.
Or perhaps wood into vanillin, which might be even more impressive.
So for you listening to this, here's maybe a provocative thought to mull over as we wrap up. In your own industry, or perhaps even in your personal endeavors or projects, what seemingly ordinary or even overlooked waste products or underutilized resources could actually be the feedstock for the next generation of high-value specialized ideas or solutions? Where is your lignin hiding in plain sight?
That's a great question. And it raises an important point for all of us, really, beyond just the sustainability angle. How many other industries could unlock significant hidden value by adopting a biorefinery mindset? Breaking down their core inputs, whatever they may be, to their fundamental components, and creating entirely new, potentially higher margin products or services that aren't even imagined today. It's fundamentally about seeing possibility and value where others currently see only waste or low value commodities. Borregaard shows it can be done.